All right, today's daf is Bava Basra, daf Kuf Samach Vav. We left off on daf Kuf Samach Hay on the Beis at the Mishnah. We raced to the Mishnah yesterday, and we finally got to the point of how we know Rabbi Yirmiyah got reinstated in the Beis Medrash after he was expelled from the Beis Medrash based on the Pesach Halach that he gave. There's a long, interesting Chassam Sofer as to what exactly was it about that Pesach Halacha that they were so sure that he was right, that it was worth reinstating him to the Beis Medrash for that Pesach Halacha, but not for now. So let's take a look at the new Mishnah. Mishnah Daf Kuf Samech Hayom Beis. Says the Mishnah, Kasabof, it says in the Shtar, Zuzin Meya, Di Inun Slotin Esrin, that I'm going to give you 100 Zuz, which is 20 Slotin, which sounds nice. The problem is, 100 Zuz is in fact 25 Slotin. So if you say Zuzin Meya, Di Inun Slotin Esrin, you're really wrong, right? It's the math is incorrect. So which is it? Are you chayiv to pay Zuzin Meya, or are you chayiv to pay Slotin Esrin? So Ein Lo Ela Esrin. Then the halacha is that you only have to pay the 20, you don't have to pay the 25 Slotin, you don't have to pay the 100 Zuz. Zuzin Meya Di'inun Tlasin Slotin. What if you made the mistake in the other direction? You said Zuzin Meya, which is 30 Slotin, but in fact, as we just said, Zuzin Meya is really only 25 Slotin. Ein Lo Ela Mana. Then you're only going to have to pay the Zuzin Meya. You're only going to have to pay 100 Zuz. You're not going to have to pay the 30 Slotin. Kesef, so basically you're paying the lesser amount in both cases. So the Ran writes that this is not an issue one might immediately associate this with. What other discussion in Shas that we've had? The discussion of whether Tfos Lashon Rishon or Tfos Lashon Achron. Right? We've had that discussion already where someone says two different Lashonos that contradict each other. So which one do we assume is serious? Is it the Lashon Rishon or is it the Lashon Achron? So he says, no, over here that's not the discussion. Tfos Lashon Rishon, Tfos Lashon Achron is when a person says two contradictory things and we're not sure if he's being chozer or what his kavana was when he chose a different lashon later on. But over here, since it says di'inun, it's clearly only coming to be mefarish what he meant to say. Meaning, obviously, if you say zuzin meya di'inun, zuzin meya, which is? So obviously, you're just trying to explain what zuzin meya are. You're not trying to be chozer on the Zuzin Meya. It's just that you made a mistake. You made a mistake in the Cheshbon of what exactly Zuzin Meya are. So then we say that Yad Balashtar ala Tachtona. And even later on in the Mishnah, where we're going to say that Hakol Holech Achar Tachton, that's also, we're going to say later on in the Mishnah soon, we're going to say that everything goes with the second Lashon in certain cases, then even that is not Shaykh to the issue of Tfos Lashon Rishon or Tfos Lashon Achron. Because for sure we're talking about in that case when we say Yad Baal Hashar HaTachtona, we're assuming that he definitely is being chozer bo. The whole issue of Tfos Lashon Rishon, Tfos Lashon Achron is when we find two lashonos bebas achas and you don't say di'inun, meaning it's not where the guy was definitely chozer, because if the guy is definitely chozer, then there's no discussion of Tfos Lashon Rishon, Tfos Lashon Achron, and it's not a case where you say di'inun where you're clearly trying to be mefarish and you just made a mistake. Tfos Lashon Rishon, Tfos Lashon Achron is when you say two things at the same time. Meaning you can't say it exactly at the same time, so you say one right after the other. But it's ki'ilu, you said two things at the same time, and it wasn't being mefarish, and it wasn't necessarily being chozer. So that's that would be the issue of Tfos Lashon Rishon, Tfos Lashon Achron, not related to our Mishnah. Mishnah continues, more cases. Kesef Zuzin di'inun v'nimchak. Let's say you wrote Kesef Zuzin, meaning you don't say a number, you just say I'm giving Kesef of Zuzin, and you don't say how many Zuzin, and then you say which are, so you expect at that point the shtar is going to specify how many Slotim of Kesef Zuzin you're going to be giving, but v'nimchak, and that line is erased, so you can't see what it says there. Ein pachos mishtayim, so we assume it's no less than two zuz, right? Because you said kesef zuzin, the inun, so it's got to be at least two, right? So that's why it's gonna from the plural, so it's got to be at least two. Kesef slotin di inun, if you say kesef slotin di inun v'nimchak, and then it gets erased, so also ein pachos mishtayim, it has to be at least two. Darkonos di inun v'nimchak. Ein pachas mishtayim. Again, no matter what currency you use to describe, whenever you say something di'inun, right, in the plural, so then it's always going to be a minimum of two. So that's the pashar halacha. Now, Chasam ba min lamala mana u min lamata masayim. What if on the top you wrote that it's going to be 100, and on the bottom of the star, when you're chozer mein yanushal star, not b'shita achrona, not in the last line, but very often shtaros have repetitive lines. So you go and you repeat in the star what it said previously, except when you're repeating the star, you change the number. Now it says masayim instead of mana. Or milamala masayim, on the top of the star you wrote 200, or milamata mana. And then when you go and you repeat in the star, it says mana. So hakol holech achar tachton. We follow what it says in the bottom of the star, because we assume that you were chozer, that in the bottom of the star, you were chozer on what you said previously. Now Rashbam adds importantly, hakol holech achar tachton, elo shlo yehe kosov b'shita achrona, provided that whatever it says at the tachton is not in the very last line, because we've just learned that the very last line of the shtar is disregarded. So if it says something in the very last line that changes the numbers, so we're going to ignore the very last line anyway, that will have no effect on the shtar. We're not going to be holich achar tachton in that case. Now the Ritva says that's not necessarily the case. Usually we ignore the very last line, and usually a number change in the very last line will not affect anything in the shtar. However, he says, what's the reason that we ignore the shita achrona? Because we're afraid that somebody's going to add in the guy holding on to the shtar, who's usually the guy who is owed the money. The malva is going to add into the shtar a higher number, that you don't owe me 100, you owe me 200. So because we're afraid he's going to add in something to benefit himself, that's why we disregard the shita achrona. What if the shita achrona, though, was not l'tova samalva? It was l'tova salova? It was l'chova samalva? So then the Ritva says, I don't think we would disregard the shita achrona in that case. So he partially disagrees with this Rashbam, that this chazara at the end is significant only if it's not in the shita achrona. He says sometimes it could be significant even if it's in the shita achrona, provided it's l'chova samalva. Fine, that's the shita of the Ritva. So says the Gemara, the Mishnah rather, Vayter, imkein lama kol shnas ha'elyon. If we're always going to go achar tachton, right? If it's we're always going to follow. Did I skip anything? No, I think I got it right. Yeah, imkein lama kol shnas ha'elyon, right? So if we're always going to follow what it says on the tachton anyway, so why do we write the elyon? Why do we write what it says on the top if we're going to follow the repetitive lashon at the bottom anyway? So the reason we double up our lashon is shim timchakos achas min ha'tachton nilamin min ha'elyon. Sometimes a letter will get erased, a letter will get smudged, and we're not going to know what it says on the tachton. So this way we'll be able to take a peek at the elyon, and we'll know what it really meant to say, and that will solve all of our problems. The Tos Yantif discusses why it is that we need all of these cases in the Mishnah, meaning a lot of these cases seem very much repetitive. So, and he says, besides for that, the idea of Yad Ba'al Ashtar Al Tachtona is an idea that comes from elsewhere. We don't need this Mishnah to tell me Yad Ba'al Ashtar Al Tachtona. And all it's really telling me is Yad Ba'al Ashtar Al Tachtona, Mos Mechaver Al Avaraya. So we could learn all the rest of the dinim of the Mishnah once you have the first din, where we see that Yad Ba'al Ashtar Al Tachtona. And he says, in fact, you find that the Rambam doesn't say any of these dinim in Mishnah Torah. He leaves out all of these dinim because he's sumich on other dinim where he makes it clear that Yad Ba'al Ashtar Al Tachtona. So once you have it in one place, you don't need to have it everywhere else. So you have to take a look. The Mefarshim and the Mishnayis try to make a tzrichusa to try to make why we need all of these different cases, specifically, you know, the Kesef Slotin di'inun, Kesef Zuzin di'inun, right, and the Darkonos di'inun, that they always mean a minimum of two. Of course they always mean a minimum of two. They're all the same thing. So the Mechaber writes in Shulchan Aruch that if it's Kosev B'Shtar Matbea Ploni di'inun, Kach V'Kach, that if it says in a Shtar a certain Matbea, which is Kach V'Kach, Chayev Ploni Leploni V'Nimchak Osuschum, it says so such and such, this guy is Chayev to the other guy, and then it doesn't say how much. Ve'enu Nikr Ein Lo El Shnayim Me Osu Matbeah. We assume that he gets two from that Matbeah, which is exactly the halach of our Mishnah. The Sma over there says that it's Mistaver Shim Bal Ashtar Toin Shayakos B'Shtar Yoser Yoel Tfisa. Right? What if the Bal Ashtar claims, no, it didn't say two, it said 10. So he can't get 10 just based on that claim, but what if he's toe-faced 10? Now try to prove that it didn't say 10, right? Now I've been toe-faced. So the Sma says in that situation, Tfisa is going to help. However, the Shach says that Tfisa is not going to help in the case of Nimchak. Ein mol Tfisa. Why? Shim lo kein, kol mi sheyesh lo shtar, yitvos arbe v'yimchal kaskum. Because then anyone who has a shtar, all he's got to do is grab whatever he can, and then just be mochik the number that it says in the shtar, and say, yeah, this is what I'm entitled to. So he says, it can't be that we're done from a Nimchak to do anything other than to make it more difficult for the motzi, for the one who's trying to get the money. And the Tumim tries to dull the Sma a little bit, right? The Sma said that Tfisa helps, so the Tumim writes that even the Sma only said Yol Tfisa when it's Nimchak Stam, where we have the kash of the Shach, that everyone could come be Mochi Kishtar, that says Sloim Shtayim, and will be Tofes much more. But the Sma, he says, Elolot Tzidei Asma Lomar, She Yol Tfisa Ela Baofen Sharo'u Edim She Nimchak Ba'ones, V'lo Yadu Ha'edim Kama Hayakasu B'shtar. He says, no, when did the Sma say that Tfisa is going to help? Only when we know how this Mechika happened. How did it get erased? We know that there was some sort of onus. We know that the guy had a flood in his house or something, and he obviously didn't want the flood. It ruined all of his stuff, and in amongst the things that were ruined were this word in the shtar. So if we know that it happened by onus, and we know that he didn't do this on purpose, then we're going to say that Tfisa is going to help. Because the whole reason that Tfisa won't help is because of the Shach's Kasha. The whole reason Tfisa shouldn't help is the Shach's Kasha, that maybe you're going to be mochik on purpose so that you can be toe-faced whatever you want. Right? Well, when we know that that's not what you did, we know that you weren't mochik on purpose, so then Mela, Tfisa is going to help. That's when the Sma said Tfisa is going to help. The Sma didn't apply that indiscriminately, that Tfisa is just always going to help. That was never the intention of the Sma. One more point on the Mishnah. The Rambam writes, Kol shtar, that any shtar that has two lashonos, that it could mean one way or the other way, you always take the pachos shebishtehen. And if you're tofes with the higher amount, ein motzin biyado el baraya brura. If you're tofes the higher amount, so then motzi mechaver el baraya, your tfisa is going to help. So the Gaos Maimonios writes that the reason that tfisa helps is because that which we say that yad bala shtar al tachtona is all a result of a motzi mechaver el baraya. So when you're tofes, so now you're the muchsak. So if someone wants to take it from you, hamotzi mechaver el baraya on him to take it from you. So the Prisha writes that from the Rambam it implies that even if you're tofes shalom yedias habaylim, that it doesn't make a difference how you were tofes, if it was with yedias habaylim or not with yedias habaylim. The implication of the Rambam is even when it's not with yedias habaylim, that is called a legitimate tfisa, and you now become the muchsuk. That is not agreed upon by all Rishonim. The Ramban writes that only if you're tofes midas habaylim, that's where it's called a legitimate tfisa, and that's where it's going to work. But when it's not midas habaylim, the tfisa is not going to help. Okay, let's see the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. Kesef, the Bach takes out Omar. Kesef, ein pachos mi dinar kesef. Kesef always must mean at least a dinar of kesef. If you just say kesef, so what do you mean, silver? It always means a dinar of kesef. Kesef dinrin, vidinrin kesef. If you say kesef dinrin or dinrin kesef, ein pachos mi shnei dinrin kesef, then it always has to be at least two dinars of kesef. Kesef bidinrin, ein pachos mi b'shnei dinrin dahav kesef. If you say kesef bidinrin, that I'm going to give you kesef in currency of dinars, so then we assume that you're going to give it in gold. You're going to give two dinars of gold in meaning you're going to give the value of two dinars of gold in silver. Right, b'shnei dinrin dahav kesef. You're going to give two dinars of gold in the value of two dinars of gold in silver. Amar mar kesef ein pachas midinar kesef. So you said when you say kesef, you're always going to give. It always means at least a dinar of kesef. Frakta Gemara, why do we assume that? Ve'ema nascha. Maybe it just means you're going to give a slab of kesef. You'll take a thing of silver and you'll give that. Who says it's got to be a specific coin of kesef? So says the Gemara. Amar blaser de kasef be matbeya. Because it didn't just say kesef, it said matbeya kesef. So whenever you have the word matbeya, that implies that it's going to be a coin, and that it's not just going to be a slab. Ve'ema priti, okay, fine, it's going to be a coin. Who told you that it should be a dinar? Maybe it should be priti, which are much smaller coins, prutos of kesef. Now, normally, prutos are nechoshes. They're a much lower currency, so normally they're made with a lesser metal, but maybe you have prutos of kesef. Maybe that's what the guy meant. Amar of papa ba'asu delosagi, priti de kaspa. No, we're talking about in a place, which is a normal place, that they don't have priti de kaspa. Most places didn't have priti de kaspa. Prutos, typically throughout Shas, are always assumed to be nechoshes. So it's not normal to have priti de kaspa. So when you say a matbea of kesef, you must mean the smallest matbea of kesef that exists in that location, which is a dinar. Tan rabbanan. Dahav. Similarly, if you say gold, ein pachos mi dinar zahav, it means you're going to give a dinar of gold. Dahav dinrin v'dinrin dahav. If you say dahav dinrin or dinrin dahav, ein pachos mi shnei dinrin zahav, it always means you're going to give at least two dinars of zahav. Dahav bidinrin, ein pachos mi b'shnei dinrin kesef dahav. Then it's going to always be at least two dinars of kesef in gold. That you're going to give the value of two dinars of kesef in, but you're going to give it in gold. Amar mar dahav ein pachos mi dinar dahav. So we're going to ask the same types of kashas, right? We said that if you say dahav, it always means that you're going to give at least a dinar of zahav. How do we know it means a dinar of zahav? Ema nascha. Maybe it just means you're going to give a slab of gold, and it doesn't mean that you're going to give dinarim of gold. Amar Rav Lazar, the kasa matbeya. No, you say specifically that you're going to be giving a matbeya. So tell us the discussion, is nascha worth more or less? Meaning, ema nascha, he says a slab sometimes worth more than the actual coin. So and we normally have the rule tafasta muat. So he says, he says that we could have said that nascha is pachos midinar. So he says okay. So Tosfos deals with the issue of and he tries to bring raya from other places in Shas where you have the word nascha. What nascha means exactly? Okay. So says the Gemara ve'ema priti. Maybe it means priti. How do you know that it means necessarily that it means dinar? Enochinami, you said matbea. That just means it's a coin. But how do you know what kind of coin? Maybe the kind of coin it is priti, which are very small currencies. So it says in our priti didava, lo avdi inchi. People don't make priti didava. That's not, you don't have golden prutos. So, okay, fine. Says Gemara, Zav bidinarin, ein pachos mi b'shnei dinarin, kesef zahav. If you say Zav bidinarin, so then you're always going to have to give shnei dinarin kesef zahav in gold. Ve'ema dava pricha. So betray dinari dava kamar. Maybe it means small fragments of gold in two dinars of gold worth of small fragments of gold. How do we know that it's supposed to be given over in kesef? Amar Abayi yad balashtar al tachtona, because we assume the lesser amount, right? The yad balashtar al tachtona, that's the rule we've been working with, and therefore we always assume the lesser amount, and the lesser amount over here is to give dinarim of kesef, is to give currency of kesef, and not pieces of gold, right? If you look at the top Rashbam, v'dilma betray dini dava pricha kamar lei kolomar zahav bedinarin travayu bezav mairi. When you say zav bedinarin, dinarim does not refer to silver. Zav bidinarin are both referring to gold. Elisha zeh matbeya, the idach havidava pricha. It's just that dinar is a matbeya, and zav is dava pricha. V'achikamar dava pricha b'shava shnei dinarin zav lava ploni miploni. So one might have thought that you give enough gold, actual raw gold, that's worth two dinars of zahav. How do you know that the word dinar relates to silver? So that's what the Gemara says, because Yad Balashtar al Tachton. We have the right to assume that dinar could relate to silver, and if it could relate to silver, then that's what we assume it does. We assume the Yad Balashtar is al Tachtona. Okay, the Mesoros on the side of the page, Mesoros Hashas, has a major change in the gear. So over here, you'll notice on the side, instead of what it says in parentheses, he has as follows, Ihachi Resha Nami. Right, that's the follow-up question. That is, even if that's the case, why don't we say the same thing in the Reisha? So, Ravashi, Reisha the kasav dinri, sefer the kasav dinrin. It says there's a big difference between the words dinari and dinarin. Right, Reisha says dinari, which implied zahav. Dinarin stam. When you say dinarin, that implies kesef. So that's why we're only going to assume dinarin necessarily means zahav. When it's dinari, we'll assume that it means kesef. Uminatamer the shiny bein dinri the dinrin. Who says there's a difference between those two words, between the words dinri and the word dinrin? So how do you know that there's a distinction? So now we're going to quote a Mishnah that highlights that there's a distinction between the two. So says the Mishnah, Mishnah Mesachas Krisus, Mesachas Taros, Detanya, Detanan, it should be, we have a Mishnah that says as follows, Haresha Yuala Safek Chamesh Leidos, Safek Chamesh Zivos. What if you have a woman who's had five, maybe, children? What does that mean? Doesn't she know if she has children? So what it means is that if a woman has a miscarriage and the Vlad is viable in some way, it's at a certain stage, and it's a definitely it was a Vlad, it just died and became a miscarriage, so then she's chayv to bring a karban for a leida. She's chayv to bring a regular karban as if it was a leida. But if it was only ruach hipila, if the woman had, we don't know what exactly it was, some sort of wind or something, there are mishnayos in Nida that go through exactly different things that look like different things that come out of her body, that whether they would count as a leida or not count as a leida. So it's a suffix. She doesn't know whether it was ruach hipila or whether she was really mapil of vlad. So she has, and it happens five times. So she has five suffix leidos. And what are suffix zivos? So what's ziva? Ziva is when a woman when does a woman bring carbon for ziva? So when a woman sees dam, the first thing she has to ask herself is, what time of the month is it? Is it during the Yemei Nidus? Is it during the days where she's expecting to become a Nida? If it's not during the Yemei Nidus, if it's on the Yud Aleph Yom, Bein Nida L'Nida, then she's eligible to become a Zava. Now, if it is during the Yemei Nidus, Midah Raisa, the halacha is, that for however long she bleeds, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, doesn't make a difference, from the time she begins bleeding, she's going to be Tameh for a total of 7 days, right? Even if she bleeds for six out of those 7 days, it doesn't make a difference. She's going to become Tameh for a total of 7 days as a Nida. Then she'll go to the mikvah and she'll be Tahara. There's no need for a Nida to bring a carbon. There's no chiv carbon for a Nida. But if she bleeds in the Yud Aleph Yom Shebein Nida L'Nida, in the time where she's not expecting to be a Nida, there's an 11-day time period between Nidus, then she's eligible to become a Zava. If she bleeds 1 day, so then, now it makes a difference how many days she bleeds. If she bleeds 1 day, so she's what we call a Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. She's going to be Tameh for that day, and as long as she's clear after that, she's going to be Tahora. She goes to the mikvah, she's going to be Tahora. If she bleeds 2 days, she's Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. She has to be cautious for one more day. And if all is clear the next day, she's going to be Tahora, she's going to be fine. But if she bleeds 3 days, then she becomes a Zava Gadola. So 3 consecutive days of bleeding during the right time of the month is what makes her a Zava Gadola, right? So a Zava Gadola, she's going to be Chayiv Karbanos. How do you have a Safek? Very simple, how you have a Safek. Rosh Bam says, Safek Hamish Zivos, Kigon Mekul Kalas L'minyana. She lost track of the count of days. It's very complicated to keep Cheshbon. You think it's difficult to keep Cheshbon of Vestals, people have trouble with. Keeping Cheshbon of the minion, of the mount, of whether she's in the Yemei Nida, Yemei Ziva, and had a Cheshbon. There are major machlokesim in the Rishonim about had a Cheshbon these days. It's not so strange for it to be difficult for a woman to keep Cheshbon. V'rasa chamisha chadashim shloshi yamim ritzufim v'kol chodesh. 5 months in a row, she sees for 3 days straight. Safik b'mei nida, safik b'tocha charas or yom shabei nida l'nida. And she's not sure if those 3 days were during her yomei nida, in which case she's not chayev any karban, and she doesn't even need zayin nikiyim. She's just a regular nida. Or if it happened during the Yemei Ziva, in which case she needs Zayin Nikiyim. So in fact, it's so common for women to have gotten confused about this, that women were mekabel on themselves long ago, that whenever they see Dam, they're always going to assume Zayin Nikiyim. They're always going to assume that they have to observe Zayin Nikiyim like a Zava Gedola, because it's too difficult to keep Cheshbon when the Yemei Nida are, when the Yemei Ziva are. So even though the overwhelming majority of women who bleed, probably it's Nida, it's not Ziva, but it's too difficult to keep cheshbon of these things, and therefore we always assume Zayin. We added on another chumrah that even if she doesn't bleed 3 days in a row, even if the women added on another chumrah on themselves, that even if Rose Tipas Dam Kechardel, even if they see a tiny drop of blood once for 1 day, they're still makabel to observe Zayin Nikiyim. Okay, it's an additional chumrah. But anyway, so you have a woman who doesn't know if she's chayiv to bring karbanos of leida. What karban does a woman have to bring when she gives birth? So she has to bring two karbanos, one ola and one chatas. right? So she brings, let's say, a kan of two birds. One is supposed to be a carbon ola, one is supposed to be a carbon chatos. And the same by zava. So mevia carbon echad, v'ochelos bezvachim ve'in ashar le'echova. Now, when it comes to the ola, you're not really going to have a problem. Because the halacha is that an ola can be brought as a nedava, right? So there's not going to be as big a problem in bringing carbon ola, because worst comes to worst, you could make it into a nedava. It could be a volunteer carbon ola. The real issue is going to be the carbon chatos. Carbon chatos is not ba nedava. Carbon chatos is only ba chova. It can only be brought as a chova. It can never be brought as a nedava. So now, what does she do about that carbon chatos? So says the Mishnah, she brings one carbon chatos. Aye, she might be chayiv 10. She brings one carbon chatos, and she's a chelos bezvachim, and after bringing that carbon chatos, she's already muteres, she's already allowed to eat carbonos, ve'in hashara lehachova, and the rest are not going to be a chiyuv on her. Why are the rest not going to be a chiyuv on her? Says Rashbam, shebekoshi yitiru lahavi chatos ha'of ala safek, kidei letarim yisafek tumasa, mishumdi chatos ha'zalukvura. Says, even allowing her to bring one chatos is a huge chiddush, because we're letting her bring a chatos ala safek, right? It might be chulun bazara, what we're allowing her to do, right? We're allowing her to bring a chatas al safik. That's a very, very difficult thing to allow her to do. And but because she's going to be tamei until she does it, we allow her to bring one. But to fulfill all the possible obligations of bringing five, that we're not going to do. Once we get her tahar, she only needs one to become tahar. So once she's tahar, we're not going to allow any more karbanos, right? The Rashbam says, what do you mean she's tahar with one? He says it's very similar to a woman who's chayiv tevila for five different reasons. Right, that if a woman has to go to a mikveh, because let's say a woman didn't go to the mikveh for 5 months, she became a nidi each month, she just hasn't gone to the mikveh in 5 months. Her husband's been away or whatever, she had no reason to go to the mikveh, or she wasn't from, whatever it was, she didn't go to the mikveh in 5 months. How many times does she have to go to the mikveh now in order to become tahora? She doesn't have to go five times. She goes once. She's Torah. So he says the karbanos are the same way. In terms of the way a karban chatos is going to be ma'akev tahara, it's only that you only have to bring one karban in order to achieve tahara. Now, if she happens to be chayiv five karbanos, she's still chayiv the five karbanos if she happens to be chayiv that, right? If they're in fact it's not a suffix and she's chayiv, then she, you know, or if it's a suffix, she might be chayiv five, but that's not going to affect the tahara. The tahara is going to happen with once. So we only allow her to bring one, that way she can eat karbanos and she at least has her tahara. What if you have five definite leidos, five definite zivos, mevia carbon echad v'chelos bezvachim? When she brings her first carbon, she's already tar, she can already eat carbonos, v'ashara le'echova. But the rest she's still going to have to bring, because those are vaday chiyuvim, right? That certainly she's going to have to bring. Before we go any further, the Gemara is going to tell an interesting story. Just a quick point. The Rav Shach asks, in Avi Ezri, he says just the Lashon of the Mishnah is a little bit difficult. Right? The Lashon of the Mishnah is ve'ein hashara le'chova, right, by the Safek case, meaning this Mishnah increases that we're quoting, in Taurus that we're quoting, ein hashara le'chova implies that it's not a chova, but if she wants, she can bring it. Right, what we saw in the Rashbam is no. Ein Ashar Lechova means we do not permit her to bring it. So Rav Shach works hard to try to be miyashev that lashon. He just notices that the lashon seems to be a little bit difficult. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter. So Maisav Amdu Kinim Yerushalayim B'dinare Zahav. Again, why are we quoting this whole Mishnah? The whole purpose of quoting this Mishnah is we want to prove that dinare and dinarin mean two different things. Right, so far we haven't seen anything that will lead us to understand that there's a difference between dinare and dinarin. Now here's where it comes. Ma'isav amdukinim b'Yerushalayim b'dinare zahav. It happened once that in Yerushalayim, pairs of birds were getting very expensive. They were charging dinare zahav for pairs of birds, and that's very expensive, right? It's typically birds were supposed to be the cheapest karbanos. If you couldn't afford anything else, buy a karbanol v'yared, right? What's the cheapest you would go? Well, depending on which karbanol v'yared, but you know, it would be a bird. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, hama'ona zeh im alin alayla ad shiyu b'dinarin. So what did Rav Shimon Gamliel do? He says, I'm not going to even sleep tonight until birds are back down to costing dinarin. What do you mean costing dinarin? So what do you see? That dinarin is worth a lot less than dinarei. So you see dinarei must be gold, dinarin must be silver. How did the rabbi control the prices? What did he do? So nichnas lebezin, he went into the bezin, velimed, and he taught the following. A woman who has five ledos vadaos, not safek, five zivos vadaos, where she's definitely chayiv, she could bring one carbon and she'll be allowed to eat carbonos. Once she brings that one carbon, she's going to become tahora. And the rest she's not going to have to bring. I'm going to let her get away with only one. And the prices went way down after that, because anyone who was chayiv multiple carbonos didn't need to buy multiple carbonos anymore. All they had to do is buy one. So they, as soon as the demand went way down, so obviously the price went down with the demand. That was what Rishon Gamliel did. So Rashi, Maseches Krisos, on this Mishnah, right where this Mishnah is quoted, Maseches Krisos, and Daf Ches says that the halacha is that she really is chayiv 10, meaning the din d'oraisa is that she's chayiv to bring, if it's chamish zivos vadaos, chamish ledos vadaos, she has to bring 10 different karbanos. Rav Shmuel Gamliel's halacha, it's not really the halacha what he did. What he did was what we call es lasos l'Hashem heferu sarasecha, that sometimes when the situation calls for it, and you see for the good of the community, as a hora'as shah, a beis din can undermine or can overpower Torah law by going against, by making a takana against what it says in the Torah. So it's clearly that Rav Gamliel doesn't come to be chalik on the Tanakama. Tanakama who says that you chayiv all the different karbanos, in a chinami, Rav Shmuel Gamliel also says you chayiv for all those things. He's not being chalik on the Tanakama. He just found a situation where he felt it was necessary to do something about the prices, and that's what he chose to do. But it's not a machlokas with the Tanakama. That's how Rashi explains. Tosos over here, however, seems to assume that whatever Rav Shmuel Gamliel said, he must have meant that this was a real halacha, that he wasn't just saying this as Neis Lassus Hashem. How do we know that Tosos assumes that? Because Tosos asks, how could Rav Shmuel Gamliel argue on both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, who both say Hashara Le'achova, right? And Tosos asks, how could the Mishnah bring a Maisa Listar? The Mishnah just brought a halacha that Hashara Le'achova, that you have to bring all 10 karbanos, and then we say, and there's a Maisa. Normally a Maisa that's brought in the Mishnah is meant to support what we just said in the Mishnah. This Maisa, the Mishnah did not say, Tanakama holds you bring 10, Rav Shmuel Gamliel holds you bring 1, and by the way, there was a Maisa with Rav Shmuel Gamliel where he paskin you bring 1. No, that's not what it said. It just never said Rav Shmuel Gamliel's opinion. Just said, Tanakama holds you bring 10. And then it quoted this Maisa, where Rav Shmuel Gamliel saw to it that women only brought 1. So that's what we call Maisa Listar. The Gemara asks all over Shas, the kash of Maisa Listar, that a Maisa shouldn't go against, it shouldn't be so ser. The halacha that just said in the Mishnah. Those are the kashas of Tosos right here. So Tosos says, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that you have to have a different girsa than the Mishnah. That when Rav Shmuel Gamliel says, Hashara Le'achova, Hashara Le'ha, right, when Rav Shmuel Gamliel, we had Ve'in Hashara Le'achova. Rabbeinu Tam is Goreis, not Ve'in Hashara Le'achova, but Hashara Le'achova, that Shitaka does have to bring all 10. What's the Chiddush then? How did he change prices then? Right, doesn't it? That's a little bit strange. One, if he's saying Vashar Le'achova, that she in fact has to bring all 10, so what was Rav Shmuel Gamliel coming to do? What did the women think initially, and what was he changing? So Tosus explains that initially they thought that they're not allowed to eat any karbanos until the women thought that they're not allowed to eat any karbanos until they bring all their karbanos. And that's why karbanos were very expensive, because not only did they have to bring karbanos, but there was significant time pressure on bringing the karbanos. They wanted to bring them as quickly as possible. So when there were a lot of women who, for whatever reason, had many karbanos to bring, like around Yontif time when they were visiting Yerushalayim, so there was an influx of women who wanted to bring lots and lots of karbanos, so then the price of birds went way up. So Rav Shmuel Gamliel said, no rush. That's all he said. There's no big rush. You don't have to bring them so quickly. It's okay. Bring one. When you bring one, you'll be allowed to eat kachim. later on you'll worry about the rest of them. But you do have to bring them. They are a chava. But Rav Shmuel was just melamed. He just taught that when you bring Karban Echad, you could already eat zvachim, and then later on you'll bring the rest. Now the Be'er Sheva has kashas on Tosfos. He says from the lashon of the Mishnah, Nichnas the Beis Melamed implies that he taught something new that was different than the Tanakhama, meaning his kashas are the exact opposite of Tosfos. Right? Tosfos says Ma'isal Listar. He must be saying the same thing as the Tanakhama. So says the Be'er Sheva, no, it sounds Nichnas the Beis Melamed sounds like he taught something that the Tanakhama didn't say. Right, he taught something that was against the Tanakhama. And also, the Pshat Lashon of the Mishnah, it sounds that because of what he taught, the kingdom went way down in price. He says, just because he gave a little extra leeway in the amount of time that you have to bring it, it went way down in price. Bishlam, if he said you don't have to bring it at all, so he said 90% of the korbanos that you thought you had to bring, you don't really have to bring. Okay, that's going to knock the prices down. But just because he said you can bring it later instead of now, that's going to knock all the prices down. So the Be'er Sheva doesn't like the Rabbeinu Tam. He says maybe we could say that initially the kinim were costing so much money because the yoldos were staying in Yerushalayim until they brought all their korbanos. They didn't want to violate Baal Ta'acher, and because they were staying in Yerushalayim, And they felt that they needed to buy it right away because they wanted to get back home. So Rav Shmuel Gamliel came to Beis Din and taught them a new din, that it's not Baal Ta'acher, that they can go back home after they bring one karban, and they can eat kachim, and they don't have to worry about Baal Ta'acher. And in that way, the prices went down, because once the women were out of Yerushalayim and they weren't even looking for the karbanos anymore, so then that knocked the prices way down. Okay, that is the understanding of what Rav Shmuel Gamliel was trying to do. Now, can we derive from here for other situations that whenever there's a problem with the prices, can we be makel on standards of kashrus if meat is very expensive? When can we change Torah laws just because things are too expensive? Right? So what exactly are the parameters of this? So it's not 100% clear. There's a tshuva of Tzemach Tzedek, quoted by the Magen Avraham, not Tzemach Tzedek Milubavitch, it's Tzemach Tzedek that's a very early Tzemach Tzedek that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch all the time from like the 1500s. So he's quoted in the 1400s, 1500s. So he's quoted in the Magen Avraham that in a situation where fish is very expensive, it could be misakin not to have fish on Shabbos, to be mevatel onik Shabbos of eating fish in order to knock the fish prices back down so that people will be able to eat fish in the future on Shabbos to have onik Shabbos. Now the Prima Gadim in the Shulchan Aruch, the Prima Gadim says that he doesn't understand how he can derive that from this Mishnah with Rav Shmuel Gamliel. The Prima Gadim says they made a takana b'shevi al taaseh so that you don't come to a kumva aseh avera. Meaning, what did they do? They made a takana that b'shevi al taaseh, you don't have to bring all the other karbanos, so that b'kum vaseh, you're not going to end up eating kachim betumah. Right? There's a Rav Shmuel Gamliel lighten the restrictions in order to make sure that at least the women bring one karban so that they don't come to eat karban betumah. So the purpose of making the takana of b'shevi al taaseh was to avoid doing naveira b'kum vaseh. He says, but you tzemach tzedek, what are you doing? You're making a takana b'shevi al taaseh not to eat fish in order that what? What's the goal over here? Because you're worried people won't be able to afford fish and they're not going to eat fish, which is what, if they don't eat fish? A violation of b'shevi al taaseh. So mehechi tesi that you can make a takana b'shevi al taaseh to stop people from doing an avera b'shevi al taaseh. If it's one thing if you're stopping people from doing something b'kumi aseh, you're stopping people b'shevi al taaseh, that's very difficult. But the truth is, it's not so difficult because the Tzemach Tzedek was not talking about a case where there was any significant violation of an avera. Right? Meaning, there's no halacha that you need to eat fish on Shabbos. Fish happen to be an onik Shabbos for many people, right? But other things could also be an onik Shabbos. You could eat other things that are also onik Shabbos. So it's not a strict halacha that you must eat fish. So maybe you have a little more leeway in a halacha like that than you would in a halacha that perhaps is more black on white, is more severe in that sense. Okay, says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Kasu Milamala, right? The Mishnah had said that if it says something on the top of the shtar, says something else on the bottom of the shtar, we always follow the bottom of the shtar, right? Tanu Rabbanan, yilamid atachton min ha'elyon ba'os achas, avalo b'shtei osios. Let's say something is smudged out, one letter is smudged out on the bottom of the shtar, so then you can look at the top of the shtar to clarify what that letter was, but not if there are two letters smudged out. If there are two letters smudged out, then you can't look at the top of the shtar to figure out what it was. Now, why? So says the Gemara, an example. Kigon Chanan mechanani va'anan me'anani. Let's say you want to figure out the guy's name. It says Chanan, and the top it says Chanani. So then you can figure out, okay, a yud got smudged out. That's not the end of the world. That happens all the time. Anan, anani. Shouldn't you be able to figure that it was smudged out, that something was smudged out anyway from the fact that right, that it's not a nun sofis, right? We give examples, dafka, with the ending letters, which is interesting. You have to look historically when those letters exactly were introduced. But anyway, so Chanan from Chanani, Anan me'anani. Maishna shtei osios delo dilma misrami shem ben arba osios vavle palge dushma. Why is it that we don't allow a two-letter discrepancy to be clarified by looking at the top of the shtar, right? So he says, because, like, let's say it said Chan, it's just said Ches Nun. Can you get that from Chanani? Or Ayin Nun from Anani? So he says, why is it that it's no good? Because maybe the name is a four-letter name in total, and it's Palgi Dishma. It's half of the name. That's too much. Half of a name that you're going to get from looking at a different part, that's already too much of the name to try to rely on a different part of the shtar. Ihachi Osachas Nami. Dilma Misrami Shem Ben Shtei Osios. Well, then one letter should also be a problem, because sometimes there are names that have only two letters, right? You have a name, Noach, has two letters. So sometimes you have a name that's only two letters. It's also Palgi Dishma if you're looking for even a one-letter help. So Ella Shtei Osios Hainu Taima. So rather, what's the reason that two letters are problematic? Not because it could be half of a name, but Dilma Misrami Shem Ben Shalosh Osios. Sometimes you'll have a name that's three Osios, like Yefes. Using all my brother-in-law's name, so right, you'll have a name that's three letters long. So v'havle ruba d'shma, and then a two-letter mistake is going to be rova the name. So when it's rova the name, it's going to be a problem. One letter can never be rova of the name, right? No one has a name that's one and a half letters. So it's a minimum of two letters. So no one has a name that's one letter either. It's a minimum of two letters. Now people did write in shtaros. It is a little bit difficult because people did write in shtaros. We just saw that they would write a single letter as their symbol, right? If you know, or pictures or whatever. So sometimes a letter was used as a symbol. I don't know. I didn't think of that till just now. So I don't know if anyone asks it or deals with it. But okay. But one letter is never going to be a ruba d'shma. Amrav Papa. Pshitali, it's pasha to me in the following case. Safal milamala, v'kafal milamata, hakol halechachar tachton. If it says safal on the top of the shtar, and it says instead of a samach, kuf, kafal, on the bottom of the shtar, and the Rishonim have a long discussion, different shitos of what these things are. Different kalim or whatever, different items that you're identifying in the shtar, but in the top it said you're identifying a safal, in the bottom it said a kafal, and these are two different items. So which one do you follow? What is really being identified in the shtar? So hakol halechachar tachton. That is clear that we're going to follow the bottom one, right? We always follow the tachton, even if a kafal is more than a safal. Because manashach, if it said mitchila at the beginning safal and then the bottom kafal, turns out that you were chozer from a safal to a kafal, and we follow the tachton. And even if in the top it said kafal, and what happened? Someone just an insect came and hit the ink at the bottom of the kuf and made it look like a samach. Mm-hmm. So then for sure you really deserve to have to give a kuf. So he says, Bari Rav Papa, what about the following? Kafal milamala v'safal milamata. It said kafal on the top and safal on the bottom. Mai, what's the halacha? Do we follow the bottom just because we always follow the bottom? Or maybe mi chashin l'zvuv olo. Maybe we should be choshesh. Hey, you know what happened in that shtar? It must have been that it was supposed to say kafal in both places. Why does it say safal on the bottom? Because they originally wrote with a kuf. A fly landed on the bottom of the leg that sticks out from the bottom of the kuf, and it turned the kuf into a samach. It's missing a couple of connecting pieces, okay, but it looks close enough. It looks like a samach when it's missing the kuf. Maybe that's what really happened. So should we assume that way? Teku. The Gemara leaves it as a teku. So how are you going to paskin on a teku? So it's interesting. One of the stylistic differences between Rashi and the Rashbam is that Rashi almost never paskins. Rashbam paskins all the time, right? Throughout the whole Masechta, the end of every sugi, he says, okay, now here's the halacha. So what do we do with the teku? So says Rashbam, v'amotzi mechaver olav haraya. Since it's a teku, we say amotzi mechaver olav haraya. Dekiven de mistapik dina lebedina, heich yotziu miyana machzik. If Bezin doesn't know what the halacha is, they can't take anything away from the machzik. And says Rashbam, don't tell me mamon amutu b'savik cholkin. V'lo dami le mamon amutu b'savik dekaimelan cholkin, tahasum ikara maisa in yedua. Mamun amutu b'savik is when we don't know what happened. Hey chaya, gon shoshanach separ v'nimsu uber b'tzida nafal abayis lavi alimo. All those cases where we don't know what happened, we don't know what the metzias was. So then we say the Beis Din can paskin cholkin. But if Beis Din doesn't know the din and it's not a question of the metzias, then it's a teku. Then we say amotzi mechaver olav haraya. We're not going to say cholkin. Okay, maybe we'll start tomorrow with the discussion of that Rashbam. Very important points in that Rashbam.